I like things my way. My coffee, my schedule, and my treatment. So I talked to my doctor about self-injecting with the VivGuard Hytrulo prefilled syringe, which contains efgartigimod alpha and hyaluronidase QVFC. It's injected under your skin, subcutaneously. It means I can inject in my space, on my time. It's my treatment, my way. Visit VivGuardMyWay.com. That's VYVGARD MyWay.com. And talk to your doctor about VivGuard Hytrulo, brought to you by Argenix.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 16, Episode 13. This week, we got a quick update on the DNA testing in the West Memphis 3 case. We also went back and listened to the full breakdown of Jesse Miskelly's false confession. We have a lot of listener questions, and we are joined with Janet today. Bob, Janet, and I are here to talk about your listener questions and theories. Before we get into that, housekeeping?
Big news. We got big news. So for those of you that are watching live, all of you that are in the live chat right now on Tuesday night, tomorrow morning, Wednesday, the 12th of March, my kid's first podcast episode is dropping. Episode 1 of the Underestimated podcast is dropping. It's been, I'm just so excited. We actually had, it was a crazy couple of days because we were, our old friend Shane Yoder wrote a bunch of like last minute, put together a series of scoring tracks for us to use, which he did over the week. He was working on Sunday. I was working with him all weekend to get the music we needed. So then we went into Monday at school and we have to, and I have this group of students, you know, an hour or 50 minutes and we have to, their episode, which was done ready for music, but we had to do all the music scoring on it before and they've never done it before. So like, I'm trying to teach them how to do it while we're doing it. They also had to write their ad copy and record the ads. They still had to record credits. We still had to like start making the bullet point, the list. They needed to make their episode artwork. We had all day. So like all day I was working on stuff during the day. They come in seventh hour. I'm like, okay, everybody, who's doing it? You're doing that. You're with me. We're doing this. Let's go. Boom, boom, boom. We were like jamming it right up until the bell rang. Didn't quite get it done. Today, I had some of them, like whenever they could get out of another class during the day, they were coming, like my poor other students, they came in, they're like, Mr. Ruff, what are we doing today? I'm like, we're finishing your project. They're like, I'm done with the project. Then what you're doing is being quiet and leaving Mr. Ruff alone while I'm over here. Cause like everybody was like every hour there was, you know, Emily came in during third hour and recorded the credits and Allie came in during fifth hour and recorded her ads and their editing. Seventh hour today, we were piecing everything together. Actually, no, they're not there. Their class was seventh hour. Sixth hour, we finished everything all up. So the seventh hour, they came in and we hooked the speaker up, turned the lights off, and the whole class, which there's three groups in that class, but the one group had theirs ready. And we played it fully finish with all the music. It was just such a cool, like everybody just sitting there all excited and we got over, everybody was clapping and cheering that we got our first episode done. Really, really, really excited about it. I think it came out great. Their first episode, they're a little concerned because it's like 15 minutes long, but I was like, it's your first episode. Like you told the story, you did a great job. It sounds good. It doesn't have to be 45 minutes long. Just so you know, if you listen, you're like, they're only 15 minute podcasts. This one is. But then I know that a couple of the other groups, they're like, well, mine's 40 minutes. Is that too long? And it's not, you know, their podcast thing be as long as I need to be. Really good. The music that Haley, our student that did the intro music, is great. The music Shane put together is great. Like, you can tell I'm over the moon. Also, that for those of you that are patrons and are listen to the pregame hour, what you just heard was like 4 days straight of extreme stress. Every minute working to the bone that finally ended about 2 hours before I sat down. And so I just sort of unloaded all my goofiness on it.
Well, I think what you've described in many ways is like working at an actual like radio station or recording studio. So they're getting even that experience that they're getting is actually pretty close to like that last minute feeling of like getting an issue out or getting an episode out. I think it's great.
Yeah. And we talked about that today, too. I'm like, this is the business. Like, it's deadlines. And also, like, when you think you're done, you're not, you know, because I have all the research, all the writing, the recording, the editing. And they're like, Mr. Ruff, we're done. We just need music. I'm like, let me show you what we just need music looks like for the next 48 hours. we get the rest of it all done. Yep. But it's really good. Well, I'll tell you, I got a little bit more to talk about it in our at the very end. I tee up what we got coming up for this Sunday. But yeah, so make sure that you guys check out the Underestimated podcast tomorrow morning if you're watching live. If this is Friday and you're listening, go on back. You can get it on Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your podcast. It's everywhere. Super exciting. And with that being said, so this was, I had talked to you guys about what's going on with the DNA testing already. So you guys were kind of aware of all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Is how long has it been since you guys listened to that interview, Jesse Ms. Kelly's interview?
I don't think I've listened to it since it was broadcast the first time through. So season 5, you know, whenever that was,
like seven years ago.
Same.
Definitely cleaner than I remember. There was a couple times I actually caught things that I didn't catch, even though you talked about them in the breakdown. Mm-hmm. That somehow I still missed. Like at some point, Jesse says that, you know, the kids ran to the park.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't even remember who's talking, if it's Gitchell or Ridge at that point, but says something along the lines of like, oh, when they ran to the pipe?
Yeah.
And Jesse clearly says park.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this is the most, because a lot of times when we have false confessions, you know, especially ones that are this egregious, the cops are a little smarter about it. Mm-hmm. You know, where they like turn, you know, think like Jennifer Jeff Lee. You know, they turn the recorder off. You know, you don't know what was said. You just have, you know, they type something out and have them sign it. But this is where we got to like hear from beginning to end how it like progresses. And it's just when I was re-listening to it, it's always been sickening to me, but it's been a long time since I listened to it again too. And I kind of went back to it because, like I said, this will have some relevance in our next season. And so I wanted to like, let me hear a good example again, doing a statement analysis and listening to how this happens. And it's just insane to me how much that whole narrative was built by the detectives and not by Jesse. How'd you feel going through it again, Janet?
Yeah, well, you and I texted about this offline, but it prompted me to go back and start listening to the entirety of season one again.
Season five again.
I mean, season five again. Yep. That's what it did. Like it made me, it just made me go, yeah, now I want to put all of this back into context and like listen to the whole thing over again. And of course I followed it very closely when you were doing it and I was familiar with it, very well familiar with it before that. And then followed up on with the Oxygen show, and it just doesn't ever get any less fascinating and infuriating. But it had been a while since I listened to all the other kind of like leads and like just the information that was coming through and all the sightings. And I'm definitely not finished listening through to season 5, but I've listened to, I don't know, 20 episodes already. I was like,
oh, wow.
On the plane 20? Listening. Yeah, I was listening to them on a faster speed. Yeah, so it was a great reminder. I think I'm certainly very, very intrigued about how it is going to play a part in upcoming stuff that we're going to be working on and talking about. But it I don't remember thinking this the last time I listened to it, which is interesting because nothing has changed since it first came out. But I think this time, maybe because the quality of the recording was so good, and understand this is anecdotal. Obviously, I'm not a scientist. I'm not saying like I'm comparing this person to someone in my life. Therefore, I'm right and I know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a family member who is autistic, who has something called Fragile X, which is a very specific type of autism. Mm-hmm. And he has, you know, intellect advanced to a certain point, and then, as you know, medical professionals would explain it, like just sort of stopped, and you know, he reached a certain level of an IQ or whatever. And he's one of my favorite people in the world and is absolutely wonderful. And when you ask him a question, usually if you ask him a thing, you know, like between two things, if you say, was it this or was it this, or if you say, hey, was it this, He'll parrot back what you said. And yeah, it really like hurt my heart in a much more profound way. I think having the better quality to really listen to and to take that in and to sort of feel Jesse's personality better and to feel, from my perspective, his victimization differently and more intensely, it really was even more upsetting and more like I was angry the last time I listened to it. And this time I was like upset because
yeah,
It's so, so clear that he should not be in the position that he's been put in. And there are so many times where you're just like, what? How can you think that this is coming from anything real? I don't know.
I think that was when I really started studying the case. When I listened to this confession the first time, was when it really hit me. How, like, it made me really mad at like the, you know, the internet people that want to argue. It's like I literally was at a place, and I still am at a place where, like, how can someone genuinely listen to that and think, yeah, that's legit, that's a real, and the way they argue about it, and like, if you want to think that, you know, whoever's guilty, I don't care, but like to say because of that confession or the like, and for me, I don't have any family members that suffer from anything like that, but you know, I spent 7 years working at a school for emotionally impaired kids, and there was also an AI division in there too. So I worked with a lot of these kids, and what I saw was the idea of suggestibility that people want to just write off. And it's not even necessarily if they have, you know, if they you know, are on the spectrum or if they have some sort of a deficit. A lot of it just comes from youth, and a lot of it just comes from personality. But I've seen and experienced so many young kids from high school on down that are just so suggestible, like you were describing, Janet, where all you have to do is just give them an indication, give them a clue about what you want them to say, and they will say it. Like and they're not even in a situation where they feel like they're at risk or anything, like somebody who's in an interrogation room. It's really, and it's a learned behavior too, you know, and it seems like people that have, you know, in my experience, that maybe have a lower IQ, they're a little less developed, especially like because I always say like there's a superpower within in a lot of these, you know, different types of disabilities. And it's, you know, there's always something, there's always a give for a take, it feels like to me.
Yeah.
And it's like one of the things that I was always so impressed with is how some of the students that I would deal with that had some cognitive impairments, but at the same time had learned how to read people like you would never believe, like how they could pick up on subtle clues when you were talking to figure out what you want them to say so that, and they will say it. So they feel, in that case, maybe it's so they feel, air quotes, normal, or they feel accepted, or in this case, so they're just getting approval from whoever they're with. And so like when I listened to Jesse's interview, it's just like, that's all over it. And of course, coming from that background, working in schools and working with kids like that, you just want to bust into that room and just kick Gitchell and Ridge out. Like, what are you doing? Like, this is awful. This is awful. Like, how do you possibly not know what you're doing to this kid?
Yeah.
Like, it's so manipulative. It's awful.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg, plus hash browns, and a small coffee for just $5.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get 2 snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying, I kind of did a thing. I think I was, to be quite honest, I was trying to listen as if I thought, well, I'm going to try to listen to this as if I've come into this whole thing thinking, assuming he's guilty. Like, yeah. What if I just tried to listen to it and with the assumption like, okay, well, I'm sure he did this. So let me listen to it from that perspective and let me see if I can be convinced that, you know, he is being led along. And so I was trying to find moments where like someone would say, oh, well, he didn't. He was like, okay, well, he didn't. There were some things that when they asked him, well, Jesse, did X, Y, Z happen? Jesse would say no. He wouldn't say, yes, it did happen.
Yeah.
So maybe people do people point to that? Do they say like, well, there was 2 times out of 20 that they said, usually, hey, did they do this to each other or whatever? And Jesse's like, no, they didn't do that. And they're like, are you sure? And he's like, no, they didn't do that. I mean, is that what people point to? Are they like, well, he would do it every single time if he was, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, usually what I always hear is they try to pile on to the number of confessions, you know. So as soon as you start picking apart this one, then it's like, well, he confessed 7 times. He confessed to a Bible. He confessed to his own attorney like over and over again. And that, like, any fault. So, like, in the docuseries, I had Jim Tranum, one of the world's leading experts in false confessions. We've also talked to Laura Nyreiter about it. You know, like, it's such a bullshit argument to say, well, he confessed so many times, because the way Tranum put it was, he didn't confess seven times. He tried to get the first confession right seven. Like, he's repeating the same. It's still one confession. He's just trying to repeat it and revise it as he's learning more information, is trying to make something that makes more sense. And again, they, like, I think people want to just write off that thing that we were just talking about. Like, why would he then confess to the cops in the police car and then confess to his attorney? It's like, you don't understand how someone who people can be in a mental state where they just want the approval of the person in front of them, and they will, and they're just trying to say the thing that's going to get their approval. They, like, the processing abilities that are in your brain that are like, but if I say this, it's going to cause XYZ consequence, doesn't play into it. It's not a factor. It's literally about what's happening right here and now.
Yeah. The other thing that I see in this particular one is how much bad information is out there and bad evidence is out there on this case.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesse is giving quote unquote guilty knowledge about facts of this, right? Of the murder, saying they were raped. And there's so many people out there that believe these boys were raped,
right?
Regardless of what the evidence actually says.
Well, they have to, because he said it.
Right.
So that's the thing, is there's all these little things that people are like, he's got guilty knowledge. He's saying this. And then people believe it, even though we know based on the evidence that it's not guilty knowledge. He's literally making stuff up, or he's being, you know, fed or put wherever he wants to be put.
Yeah.
But there's so many of those little nuances where it's like, they say the boys were sexually assaulted. Who's they? Where is this coming from besides Jesse?
Well, and that's the thing, is if you like break all the emotions out of it and you just look at, do what we normally do. I've talked about this so many times, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is when you can source a lie, when you can source misinformation, then that can tell you like how these things happen. In this case, what you have is when they were interviewing Jesse, who thought the boys had been sexually assaulted? The officers that were interrogating him did. And so then that ends up into his narrative, right? And who thought that they had like cut him with the knife and did and you know, all the things, the mutilation, all the stuff they did.
Mm-hmm.
The cops that were interrogating him thought those things, and then that information ends up in the confession. And then when it's analyzed later by professionals and experts, find out none of that's true. So now not only does that help show you that it was a false confession, but it also shows you where the narrative came from. Even though in this case, it's not hard to figure out. You literally hear the, I don't remember if I said it in this episode or not, but at one point I'd like counted, like, if you take a transcript of just what Jesse said, like, I don't remember the number of times, but it's insane. Like what Jesse said, if you play just his transcript is, yeah, yep, mm-hmm, uh-huh, yep, yes, mm-hmm, yeah, yep, yep, mm-hmm, yep. Like, he never says anything. Like, they are telling him stuff, and then he's just agreeing to literally everything that they're telling him.
Or he'll agree, but he'll just agree and repeat word for word, like, whatever the last four words were that they said to him. Like, was it this? Yes, it was this.
But it's shocking. It's actually shocking. Like, how little of that there actually even is. One of these, you know, that's what I should do that sometime when I have all the free time that I have. Go through and edit it and just edit out everybody except Jesse and just play that.
Here's your narrative. Interesting.
That would be an interesting list.
Yeah, that I've would done be interesting.
It, like, I did it reading it one time, like through the transcript, like I broke it down and was like counting how many times he owned it. I can't, it's popping in my head. It was like 90 sometimes, but I don't remember off the, you know, I'll have to look at it. But I think it would be really interesting to hear. Here's your narrative from your confession,
mm-hmm.
and hear what Jesse actually said.
Yeah.
It would be really interesting to hear. Maybe that's what I'll give Erica to do.
I mean, we can't really do that with Jay, because Jay, they turned the tape off so many times and they worked with him so hard that by the time we got his narrative, it was tap, tap, top spots.
Well, and Jay is a different story. Because Jay was, I think, on the other hand, was highly intelligent.
Yeah, incredibly intelligent. So was able to, like, take the material and, like, braid it together as best as one can. But that's another situation where, in multiple interviews, the information that the police think they're working off of changes. So he has to change in accordance with what they want to hear.
Right. Same thing, right? He gets the cell towers wrong. And we find out, well, why? Because the police thought that's where they were. But in Jay's case, it's harder to pick up on. You have to, like, really kind of do the math on it and really listen for those, because One, because of his intelligence, you can be far more subtle about it. You can use physical cues instead of verbal cues to get him to say what he wants. And also, Jay knew the game going in. Like, Jay went in intending to tell a lie.
Right.
In order to get himself out of trouble. As opposed to Jesse, who was just going along. He didn't know what he was in there for. He was going to say whatever they wanted him to say.
Well, in Jesse's case, and it reminds me more of like Brendan Dassey, where, you know, he goes in to try to tell the police what they want and ends up, you know, implicating himself on accident. They both do.
Right.
Which wasn't their intent, but they both end up implicating themselves in this crime.
Because they won't, because the police won't accept anything less than what they've determined they want, which is full. You have to be fully involved. We need you fully involved, you know.
Especially in this case.
Anybody who says after they confess, like Brendan Dassey, who's like, hey, I got to go back to school, or will I still be able to take my test tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
You just, how do you reconcile that?
It reminds me of Damien telling me, I don't remember if he ever said this publicly, but I remember just in conversations I've had with him, that when he was on death row, that he was talking about that they were executing people that were so challenged mentally that one of them, they gave him his final meal and he had like apple pie was part of it and he didn't finish it. And he said, save it for me so I can have it after I'm done.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if he's, I think it's in one of his books. I think I've read that in one of his books.
Broke my heart.
I just remember sitting on his couch in his living room and him telling me that story. He's like, you don't understand. Like, they don't care. Like, how do you execute somebody that is that far removed from what reality is, that literally thought he would eat the rest of his pie after they executed him? It's horrible.
Yeah, that's awful.
That's so upsetting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we should probably get to these questions because I know there's some stuff about Adnan too, and I don't know. Well, I know what's in there because I sent it to you. But also, I didn't organize it. Sorry, I was in a hurry too. I was doing that in the middle of this.
That's okay. So just to very quickly clarify before we go any further, for folks who maybe did feel like this was just kind of dropped into their world and they weren't as familiar with that season or they hadn't heard it at all, you do mention Tim Clementi in the context of, at this point, we would already know who Tim Clementi is. So do you want to just give a very quick overview for anybody who was brand new to this particular episode?
Yeah, Tim Clementi is Jim Clementi's brother. And Tim has also worked for a multitude of three-letter agencies. And we had him come in and do a statement analysis. And a lot of what he said was it's hard to know because we don't know what was said in the pre-interview. Like, we don't know what was said to him before he got in there, but we'd had at some point the episodes there too where Tim evaluated the interview as well.
Okay. Yeah. And so not unlike Jim Trainum, who you also just mentioned as well. I'm so glad that those people exist when they are paid attention to.
Yeah.
Kathy, just kind of commenting on that as well. How can those two, Gatchel and Ridge, sleep at night? I just can't understand a detective that's okay with questioning a person with the mental capacity of a 7-year-old without an advocate, then using that confession to sentence someone to death. How could anyone listening to that think it's a legitimate confession? Yeah, Kathy, you are not alone.
I think about it a lot, and it's awful. There's a lot of cases we cover where there's, you know, there are mistakes that are made. People just aren't good at their jobs. They're lazy. In this case, like, I'm sorry, there's no other excuse for this. When you really, if you go in with an open mind and listen to this interview, I don't see how anybody could come away from that and think, yeah, they legitimately thought they were getting a true confession from a killer. Like, you hear them on the tape intentionally feeding this boy this story. And like, that is... like, that person has no soul, as far as I'm concerned, somebody that would do that.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to sort of listen to it with some devil's advocate kind of point of view in an effort to kind of be open-minded. And I mean, the only thing I can think is, like, if you are just, and I'm not saying this is right, and I agree with you, but if you have just decided that this person knows, and you've just decided it, then you're just not listening. That's not an excuse for them, because that's like the number one thing they need to be doing.
Yeah.
And if they're telling themselves, like, and I don't feel this way about Jesse, I'm saying, like, in their minds, hypothetically, if they're like, we know he's involved and he's so stupid, he doesn't even remember. Like, he's so stupid, we have to tell him what he did. You know what I mean? Like, that you're just being derisive and you're using his intellect against him in so many different ways, up to and including, like, I'm having to tell him what he did. That's how dumb he is. Like, that you're so twisted in your head that you will not see past, I've already made my decision, and anything that flows from that has to be that it's not that he didn't do it. I have to come up with another reason for why he's doing what he's doing, because I already know he did it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's what I always wonder is, and neither is excusable, but did this happen because they were already completely convinced that, because the sad part about it was, Jesse was never part of the narrative for them until this interview. Like, they were after Damien. They were convinced Damien did it. And it wasn't, and they just couldn't get Damien because there was no evidence against Damien. And so then they were, like, willing to, and because you want to at least, like, it's almost the lesser of two evils, think it was that, right? We're sure these three boys did this. So if we got to bend the rules and we got to help this guy say the story we need him to say, it's, you know, all for the better because we got to get these three because we're sure they did it. But I don't think you can even assume that because, like I said, they didn't think it was those three boys. They thought it was Damien. Jason was collateral damage. Jesse was collateral damage. They only thought it was Damien. So they were willing to throw a person that maybe they did believe was guilty, but they were also willing to throw two other people that they had no reason to believe were guilty in with them just so they could get the guy that they were after.
Well, and I truly believe that even at the point that they started this, they didn't think Jesse had anything to do with it.
No.
I think they were trying to get Jesse to say that Damien did it.
I agree.
And that was it.
Yep.
And Jesse implicated himself.
Yep. And then they had a gold mine because mm-hmm. now it's like, well, now you've already said you said you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You're part of it now. You can't back out and not testify against Damien because now I don't think there's any question about it. They thought they could get Jesse to make a deal to testify against Damien and make that easier for Damien or easier for them to convict Damien. But then Jesse, you know, with all his flip-flopping and confessions, all the things you said, he never would do it. He would never testify against them. We found out later through the jurors' notes that that information leaked into the jury room anyway about the confession. But you got to remember, Damien and Jason's trial, this confession wasn't part of it because Jesse wouldn't testify against him. But again, we found out later that they knew about it and it did play into the decision.
Ugh, what a mess. I feel like I say that every single week.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we deal with a lot of messes. Matt says, hypothetically, let's say Terry Hobbs, for example, or someone else, as skin cells are found on all the bindings, what happens next? We already know a hair was consistent with his, but can be put down to secondary transfer. I would also love to see those sticks used to force the clothing into the water tested. Surely they would have DNA embedded.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to specifically state Terry there because he's talking about the fact that, like, what would happen if it was Terry's because of the fact that there was already a hair that was consistent with Harry found in the bindings, and that didn't result in, you know, him getting charged with this. We've talked about this a little bit before. I think it would come down to the motivation of the prosecutor, and it would come down to where and how much DNA you find, right? So that, because mm-hmm. obviously a defense is going to argue transfer. It's transfer. The boys were in the house, so that's how Terry's DNA got on their shoelaces. I've said this before, and I'm not saying Terry, maybe it's not, maybe it won't, but in this hypothetical scenario, if you did find Terry Hobbs' skin cells on all these bindings, with the absence of anybody else's on top of that, right? So, like, how do you, it's a bullshit argument. Because even the hair, to me, was a bullshit argument. And I will say, too, we don't know that was Terry's hair.
Mm-hmm.
It was mitochondrial DNA. It was one in whatever, a few hundred people or 900 people or somebody that could have had that. That's many, you know, that doesn't mean it was Terry's hair. But whoever's hair that was, I believe, was the killer. That's who did it. Because what you have to remember is all three boys had their shoes on and tied. The killer untied their shoes and then pulled the laces through every eyelet in the shoes to get them out and then retied the knot in a different place from where they were tied if the shoes were just normally tied. And that hair was inside of that knot. It was bound inside of the knot, visible. Like that. That's how they pulled it. They saw it and they pulled it out with tweezers. The idea that a kid picked up a hair while just happened to be walking into a house and then rode around on their bikes for 2 hours, ran through people's yards, ran across the bridge, were playing in the mud, got their shoes untied, pulled through all the eyelets and retied, and the hair they picked up on that from that person's house all those hours earlier is still just stuck to that shoelace is a bullshit argument as far as I'm concerned.
So if there is DNA found in these ligatures, regardless of who let's say it's not Damien's, not Jason's, not Jesse's, and there's a significant amount found in these ligatures, regardless if it's Terry Hobbs or anybody else, is that enough to vacate the conviction?
And again, it depends on the prosecutor, and it'll depend on a judge if the prosecutor fights it. But it kind of depends whose it is, too, right? So let's say you found a little bit of DNA on one of the knots,
mm-hmm.
but that DNA comes back to someone who was convicted of murdering a little boy in West Memphis a year after this, who had no connection to the boys and they weren't in their house.
Pretty compelling.
Yes.
And you can't explain it otherwise.
Right. The problem with it, you know, in this example, if it was Terry's, is the boys were in his house, and that opens the door for them to try to make the transfer argument.
But what I could understand that in the fact that they wouldn't go for an arrest.
Yeah.
Like a second arrest. But would it be enough to vacate the three? Because if they're not present at all, but there's clearly DNA present from somebody across the board, even if it is Terry, and they can say that it's transfer, the DNA is still not there from the three.
Yeah, I would think, again, it's all going to come down to the prosecutor and the judge, what they want to do with it. But I think you could certainly make the argument of, again, this example. So Terry's DNA is found, his skin cells are found on these shoelaces. And the prosecutor's like, well, I don't think that's enough to try to go after Terry because they were in his house. I think it's very fair to make the argument. I think this is what you're getting at, to say, well, if all it took was for them to walk into his house 2 hours earlier for 2 minutes, for his DNA, his skin cells to be stuck to all these shoelaces, then there's no way that you can say that Damien Echols tied knots in those laces and didn't leave a single cell of DNA in them. So in that case, I would think logically you would be able to use that to overturn the conviction. Yes. But again, I hate to make those predictions because we've seen some horrible shit from prosecutors and even horribler shit from judges.
It's not feeling great right now.
Yeah.
Because happening in a vacuum.
Yeah. Well, I mean, fingers crossed, this new DA seems to be motivated to get things done, but then sitting in this delay right now, so who knows? But to kind of get back to the question, as far as, I think it will depend on the volume and the amount, right? So if you find a couple of Terry's skin cells on one of the knots or one of the shoelaces or two of the shoelaces, I don't think that'll be enough. It may be enough to overturn the conviction if they're motivated to do so. Don't think it'll be enough to go after him. I don't know, because I'm just thinking of the argument that anybody might make about transfer. If you find Terry Hobbs' DNA skin cells in all 12 knots in high volumes, and there's not, you know, and it's either in higher volume, either only his, or it's in higher volumes, maybe it's a mixture and there's just a little bit of the boy's DNA, but a lot of his DNA, something like that, then I think that, I mean, you would have to just throw away your idea of justice as a prosecutor to not go after him and file the charges in that situation. So I think it all just depends. You know, there's a lot of scenarios there. There could be, you know, that could happen, and there could also be a mixture of several other. Say you find that, and then you also find Pam's DNA on there too. You know, then obviously it's going to be. We know Pam was at work when all this happened, so like be like, well, I mean, hers is on it, his is on it. They were in the house. That's clearly transfer, right? So mm-hmm. You would expect something like that. I don't think you can make the argument if it's his DNA and his DNA alone, and it's in several places.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get 2 snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get 2 snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
I don't know. I mean, I just go round and round with thinking like, I guess people are just wired differently and people just make decisions for different reasons. But I can tell you, as sure as I'm sitting here, for any one of the three of us who strongly feel confident to 100% sure that Jesse and Jason and Damien had nothing to do with this, if that DNA came back and it had their DNA all over those knots, I would take that incredibly seriously. I wouldn't know how to reconcile it with all of the other information we have, but I would not go, I don't care.
Yeah, no, you can't get
doesn't
away
mean
from
anything.
That.
Mm-hmm.
Damien
but
has said that to
you know what I'm
me.
Saying? Like, I'm...
Yeah.
I Damien, but Damien there are people said, who are like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It won't matter.
No, that's crazy. Damien has said to me, like, what he was like, because, you know, all the people that are like, it was a publicity stunt. Is this, I'm already trying to make every excuse for the fact that Damien has been the one pushing for this DNA testing for years now. He's the one pushing for it. And he's said to me, he's like, don't these people understand? Like, I know if we do this and you find one of my skin cells on those knots, then there is no question that I'm guilty, unless it's, you know, somebody planted it there or something afterward. But then again, that's not as easy. People are worried about that. It's always a possibility, but it's not as easy as you think, because you can also look at the degradation of the DNA. You can tell if that DNA has been sitting there for 30 years or if it's been sitting there for 2 years. Like, you can tell the difference.
Yeah.
You know, that would be hard to argue that. But like you said, he said, I have never seen those boys. I have never met those boys. I have never been to that place. And I didn't do anything to those boys. There is zero reason for a single one of my skin cells to be on anything there. And Damien knows it. And he also knows that if his DNA is found there, then that's it. Like, the argument's over. And I do want to circle back because Matt said something in the chat here. Forgot about the other part about it. He said that they want to test the sticks too. Mm-hmm. I believe that's part of it. I believe that's part of what's kind of been kind of pushing this back, is the original motion was just to test the bindings. And now they're pushing to have lots of things tested. And I believe the sticks are on that list, because that's what Susanna Ryan, who we had on, she was the expert from Pure Gold Forensics that does the MVAC testing that was on the docuseries. She said that's one. And even though they were full, you know, the thing with the knots is, any DNA skin cells that were put on while the knots were tied would be captured inside the knot, and they would be protected from the water from getting washed away. Even though the sticks had flowing water over them, which would have washed a lot away, there are also jagged edges, and mm-hmm. the killer would have had to push those down into it. And so there, she said she thinks that that's a place they should check. And also the advantage of that, and I think that's why Matt brought up, is that can't be explained away. So let's say you got that hair, mm-hmm. and again, this is a hypothetical scenario, but say you also find some of Terry's DNA in the knot, and you can still make the transfer argument, but then you also find his DNA on one of those sticks. There's no arguing that. There's no reason for anybody.
Oh, that stick was at their suspect. House. No.
No, that stick was used to shove the boys' clothes down into the mud after the murderer murdered them. That's the only excuse for that.
Yeah. Tracy says, do we have a date yet for the judge to sign off?
No, nobody, at least nobody that I'm in the loop with, knows what's going on there. I know Damien's very frustrated about it. I'm frustrated about it. So as I mentioned, it was supposed to happen in January. There was a scheduling conflict with the attorneys. I think it was Jason's attorney couldn't make it or something. Got rescheduled for February 25th. And that was a go. Like that was a go. It was happening. It was set to be signed. And then literally the day before, the evening before, what I was told was the prosecutor was sick and couldn't make it in. And so they were going to have to reschedule it. But then it's been kind of cricket since then. So to be honest with you, I'm concerned. I mean, Damien has been concerned. You know, Damien has had the rug yanked out from him so many times that, you know, his initial, when it got rescheduled in January, he's like, that's it. It's never going to freaking happen. That's done. They always do this to us. It's not going to happen. And then it got rescheduled for February, and hopes are up again. Here we go. Let's get this thing signed. And it was supposed to be like signed, package shipped that day. Evidence going to the labs. And then it got pushed back again. And he's like, the same bulls. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. Something's going to happen. They're not going to do it. And at the time I was like, dude, it's just somebody's sick. It's a scheduling conflict. Like it's going to happen. Like give it a little bit and it's going to happen. But here it is now. It's March 11th. You know, it's we've got what, 2 full weeks have gone by. And nobody, you know, through anything I've heard from Damien and other contacts I have that are involved with it, like nobody, everybody's just like, we don't know. We don't know what's happening now. We don't know. We're waiting. We don't know what's going on. So I really don't know what's going to happen right now. As far as I know, from what I've checked repeatedly, everything's still supposed to be a go. I don't know why it hasn't happened yet and why we don't have a date for it to happen yet. But I will let you know as soon as I know.
And what is, I don't need to indulge this very long with a long answer, but, and what is the reason that people who are 100% convinced that Damien is guilty, what is the reason that they give for him, like, desperately wanting this evidence to be tested?
So, well, it goes, I think they're kind of, I mean, I don't know. I haven't been, you know, I've pretty much kind of gotten really off of social media in the Great. Last few years.
Yeah, you don't have to know the answer to this. I'd be glad if you didn't.
Well, I can tell you what the argument was. It has to be fizzling out, because what it was is when, after the docuseries, him and Jason and Jesse were all in there, said, yes, test the evidence. We did the big push at the end of the docuseries for people to put pressure. That worked. They said they would test it. Damien wanted to test it. And then, you know, Ellington yanked the rug out under that. So did Cressman. Then Damien filed the motion to do it. And then the argument was, it's all a publicity stunt. The argument they were making was, Damien's just doing this to get money because he knows that it won't get improved. There's no way they're going to let him test this evidence, and he knows that. That's why he's pushing for it, so he can get money. And by the way, Damien didn't get a dime for anything. Even like the fundraising we did, we just paid experts for that. Like, we helped fund that work, but like nobody gave Damien any money for this. And I know, like, Damien is I consider him a very close personal friend at this point. And I know his heart, and what he just wants is this to be over with and finally clear his name and finally find the real killer. And the same is true with Jason. I don't know Jesse. I've met Jesse, don't know Jesse that well, but I know Jason and Damien pretty well. And so that and then it got denied, and then it was like a really thirsty. See, he knew it was going to get denied. That's it's all a publicity stunt. That's all this is. And if you know Damien, what you'll really know is that he wants the opposite of that. He does not want any publicity. He's sick of publicity, but he doesn't want to be on TV anymore. He doesn't want to be, you know, he sent me that one text, you know, when a lot of the stuff was going on, and he just said, I don't want to be famous anymore. All of a sudden I got all these people calling me, wanting me to do interviews and all this stuff, and I'm just done with it. I don't want to do it anymore. But so that was the argument. But then it got approved, or not approved, but then we got, you know, got remanded back. We're working out this deal. So I don't know what they're saying now, but it's always going to be some sort of pivot that he doesn't really want to test. He doesn't really want to test it. And my suspicion is once we get the order signed and it's set out, they'll already immediately start creating another narrative. You know, there's, of course, there are a lot of people that think that maybe because of the hair that maybe Terry Hobbs' DNA will be on it. So they already start creating narratives about that. Like, well, obviously his guy is going to be there because, you know, they're already planning for what they think they're going to find. I don't know. Some of those people, in my opinion, are just never like you. The DNA could come back and there could be a serial killer's DNA on all 12 knots and all over the sticks. And they could find that serial killer, and that serial killer could then confess to doing it and explain why and exactly how it happened that perfectly fits the evidence. And there's those people will still be like, nah, Damien did it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the thing that makes me feel some comfort about that is very selfish, which is comparing myself to that and going, well, I know that's not me. Like,
yeah,
I'm very open to the truth. I just am.
Yeah.
It's almost like I am on a podcast with that name in the title. So that's really all we have for West Memphis 3. It's what we have for Adnan. There is a question from Veronica about whether or not we've been keeping up with Songbird Road. I will tell you right now, Veronica, I absolutely have been, and it is very exciting. It's quite a story. So have you guys been keeping up with it?
Well, we were talking in the pregame. Neither of us have like been able like to keep up, so we were hoping you had.
Oh,
so
that started
the 30-minute argument on the pregame show. It was literally that question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what. I can't wait to listen.
No, I mean, I haven't caught up. It's not for lack of interest. I think it's great. I'm super interested, and I want to. But you know, as I told Bob and Lauren when I had them on, it was like, you know, I'm not convinced now. But the thing is, like, I know the two of you, and I know there's a reason you're doing this. So I'm waiting to hear the evidence. And from what I'm seeing on social media and the way you're like, am I going to be convinced if I continue to listen to this thing? Because I know there's got to be bombshells coming.
Yeah, there is some very exciting stuff that is totally coming from this particular investigation. It's like never before discovered that like Lauren and Mata discovered. That's massive, massive. And then there's also just those moments where you're just aghast that they didn't, that there were things that they didn't test and that there were opportunities there that just, there's just no other, I mean, I just don't know how you look at it any other way than like, then you don't want the truth. Like there you have pieces of evidence that you could have tested and things that, you know, just getting the full picture. It's just getting the full picture. It's just investigating.
Yeah.
Man, it's really that simple. It's really that simple.
I had it on my docket for this weekend. I was Quentin and Bella were home for spring break from college, and I was going to be taking Quentin back to college, which is about a 6-hour round trip. And I was like, that's when I'm going to catch up on that drive. And then ended up, I've got college homework to do, and his mom ended up taking him back, so I didn't make the drive. But I got to find time to listen to him. I have to start listening to it at the gym on the track.
Yeah, and Amy, I see your quote, your comment. Yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard to listen to. I agree with you. Anything. Same with Forgotten West Memphis 3. I mean, I don't know why I'm putting myself through all that all over again, because I just cry. I cry during the Songbird Road episodes. I cried listening to you talk about the kids. And they're very real to me, as they were. Mm-hmm. They are real children who deserve justice. And that's a really hard part of being interested in all of this and being passionate about it. And so I don't blame you. I'm not saying like, shame on you. You should still listen. I completely understand. We all know, you know, ourselves, and we have to take care of ourselves. We have to take care of ourselves to be the best versions of ourselves, for our loved ones, for the big picture stuff that we're trying to work on. But that being said, feel free to ask us questions, because it's real juicy. The good stuff, the interesting stuff is fascinating and infuriating.
Oh, I got to finish it now.
We'll have to all talk about it when we're caught up.
Yeah. Real quick, before we wrap things up, we had planned on talking about Adnan stuff. You missed it. Just acknowledging where we're at right now. It was an emotional roller coaster last week. Obviously, we had Ivan Bates that withdrew the motion to vacate the conviction, which puts, you know, Adnan at a pretty serious risk of having his conviction in place for the rest of his life at this point. Not for sure. There's other avenues, but pretty disheartening. But then we got the ruling just a few days ago that the judge ruled in the JRA hearing and did rule to resentence Adnan to time served. So that's where we're at. Obviously, Rabia and her Instagram, and I know her and Colin are doing an undisclosed some episodes about it. They're going to be explaining it. So that's your source. But just for any of you that haven't caught up on all that, just to hear from us. So this is where things stand with that. As far as Adnan going back to prison, that ordeal is over. He is a free man for the rest of his life. He was sentenced. It's as though he was convicted. He was sentenced for 23 years. He served it, and he's out now, and it's over for him. So that's the good news, is he can continue living his life from here on out. The bad news is the conviction still stands. He still has that conviction hanging over his head, which thankfully with the support network that he has and between family, friends, and just the world around him, I don't think Adnan is going to struggle because of that, as far as like in a practical way. Like he's already got a great job. People know that he's innocent. People are working with him. It's kind of like Ed. People know, that he hasn't, that murder conviction hasn't stopped him from really, moving on with his life. So that's good. But it's still hanging over his head. He still isn't cleared, and that sucks. But more so for me, the thing now that really bothers me at this point is the thought of the idea of someone actually going out now to try to actually investigate this case and find Haman Lee's real killer is almost over now. I mean, I don't see a situation where that's going to happen unless something spectacular happens and somehow the defense comes up with a way to overturn the conviction. And even then, I don't know if there's going to be a motivation to find Hayes real killer. And that's the real injustice in all of this when it's all said and done.
Absolutely.
And with that being said, on that bummer of news, a little bright shining light, hopefully, put together this week's episode. And as I mentioned at the top, my kids' podcast is coming out on Wednesday this week. So for those watching live, it's tomorrow. For those listening on Friday, it's already out. Go to listen, go look up the Underestimated podcast, Underestimated under Bobcat Media. First episode's out, super excited about it. And as we were leaving today, I thought, what would be a really cool episode is if I grabbed the group leaders from my students, the group leaders that are creating these podcasts. And we sit them all down in the studio at school and I interview them, and you guys can hear from them about what this process has been like for the students as they've been going through this. So that's what we're going to do for Sunday. I think that would be, the whole idea, right? We're going to be doing episodes about people that are doing, we're either educating or doing, highlighting people who are doing good work in the space. And I think that these students are some of those people. They're doing great work in the space. They're trying to make a difference in the world. And so I want to give them an opportunity to share their stories beyond their scripted podcast and let you get to know them a little bit. So that's going to be this Sunday. So make sure you guys tune in for that, and we'll talk all about it in next week's follow-up. Janet, we're so glad to have you back. We love you. We miss you.
I'm so glad to be back, and I'm so glad that you're doing this, because I was really hoping that you would do an interview with the kids. I just wasn't sure if they would be willing, because I didn't know if they would be too shy. So I'm very excited that.
Yeah, I got four of them that are up for it.
Great.
Yeah, as long as their fifth-hour teacher will let them out tomorrow.
Got it.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
The new year brings new health goals and wealth goals. Protecting your identity is an important step. Your info is in endless places that could expose you to identity theft, leading to lost funds. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
This is Julian Edelman from Dudes on Dudes with Gronk and Jules. Sunday mornings, I've got my game day ritual. Coffee, lucky socks, and now new morning Uncrustable sandwiches.
It's all about that 12-gram protein boost with the new Uncrustables Bright-Eyed Berry or Up and Apple flavors.
Bright-Eyed Berry's got a feisty receiver energy.
Up and Apple? Your classic do-it-all tight end.
Soft, pillowy, packed with protein, and easy enough for Gronk to grab from the freezer.
Whether you're on the couch, driving to the tailgate, or heading to the locker room, new morning Uncrustable sandwiches are the MVP of snacks.
Your new Sunday kickoff ritual starts here with new morning Uncrustable sandwiches packed with 12 grams of protein.